House Education Committee meeting will be called to order. Today's Wednesday, March 14. Tomorrow is the Ides. 2012. We don't have a meeting on the Ides. And time is 8:04. Present are Representative Seaton, Representative Peggy Wilson, Representative Kawasaki, and myself, Representative Alan Dick, and Representative Feige is walking in the door. We do have a quorum. Remind people about cell phones. We're going to start this morning with a superintendent presentation by Robert Boyle, Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District, followed by HB 256, State Intervention in Schools. So I've never been to Ketchikan, so I think we're going to take a trip there this morning. Superintendent Boyle, Annette will walk us through your slide presentation. So please introduce yourself for the record. We have a good visual here. Hope you do too. And go ahead with your presentation, sir.
Yeah, good morning. Robert Boyle, superintendent.
Okay.
Timeout signal.
Timeout. Excuse me, superintendent, timeout. Time out. We're not getting any audio here. Okay, go ahead and try to talk, sir.
Good morning.
Okay, that's better. Let's see how that goes.
Okay, another funny start.
No, we're getting about half of what you're saying. Okay, we have a designated internet line here, too. The problem before was when everybody showed up in their office, then they, you know, everything got crowded onto the literally bandwidth. But
I've had my technology group dedicate bandwidth for this morning.
Yeah, we're only getting about half of your sentence. Do we have a solution or try again?
Good morning. Good morning. Robert Boyle, Superintendent, Ketchikan Gateway Borough. How's the sound?
No, it's not working. Okay. Yeah, why don't you, brief at ease. Does he call in or are we? What is it we need to do? Do we have his phone number?
We need the number to call him.
Superintendent, can you give us your phone number, sir?
247-21-36.
I have a number, but I just don't know that it's his direct line.
That's the
trick. Could you ask one more time?
Superintendent, can you hear me? Could we get your phone number, sir?
247-211-36.
I didn't
tell him to put his fingers up so we know what the
right is. Write it out and hold it up.
2-4-7-2-1-3-6. Back to order. Superintendent, can you hear us, sir?
I can hear you very well. Can you hear me now?
Okay, good. We got a little lag, but we can see you as well, and we can hear you. So please go ahead with your presentation.
Yeah, thank you. Robert Boyle, Superintendent, Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District. We're having some weather issues down here today. Cell phones are down. I was trying to come in that way. Our internet's obviously a little bit shaky, and it has to do with some weather conditions we have. First of all, I just want to thank the House Committee for giving me this opportunity. I know it's sometimes curious, perhaps, for you to know the good works that you do actually result in good works out here into our schools. And so I'd like to walk you through Ketchikan's school district's performance and where we are with our educational programs. If we're on slide one. Okay, slide one, there's an advanced slide. There will be several parts to each slide. So if you just hit the advanced one, it should introduce myself, and it shows the scenery around Ketchikan. Let's go on to slide 2, and it'll come up with the school district's mission statement. And slide 2, the school district's mission statement, the mission of the Ketchikan Gateway Rural School District is to provide high-quality instruction to every student. And I wanted to draw attention to the fact that when we start talking about every student, the scope and depth of our mission changes significantly. Just providing a high-quality education can be done in a fairly narrow spectrum, but when you start talking about every student that you're trying to serve, you indeed have a wide range of opportunities and scope of programs. So what we've been able to do is to focus on our school readiness, learning to read, read to learn, doing math and language arts in an elementary school, and bringing those forward to our middle school and high school, and we'll walk you through that. Our community needs are a big part of our program, so recognizing who we are as a fishing industry, tourism, we've got mining coming in, and a service industry for medical programs, the Peace Health Hospital serves the entire southeast region, and then we have Coast Guard personnel, and we have, of course, the National Forest. So we have a wide range of what we would call our community. If we go on to slide 3, slide 3 is a graphic representation of our strategic plan. Strategic plan, when you really get into it, talks about your vision, and again, it has every student mission to provide high quality instruction to every student. And we focus our strategic planning into 3 key areas. Instruction, of course, that's the core of what we're trying to get done. Environment. We have to create an educational environment, both physically, emotionally, where students are secure, safe. We take our obligation, our opportunity to provide our community's children with education quite seriously. The in loco parentis concept is something that we cherish, and we're very concerned with making sure we have the appropriate environment within our schools. And then, of course, we do our schools in reflection of our community. We figured there's really 3 basic measures to being successful as a school district. How good is our attendance? How good are our, how high of a graduation rate do we have? And then what kind of student achievement are we accomplishing as our students move through our system? I wanted to draw special attention to our graphic representation. In the background, you'll see a triangle. And a triangle rests on basic premises of response to intervention programs and then a positive behavior support. A lot of people don't see that this is basically a school restructuring effort that's gone across the state and nation over the last 5 or 6 years to emphasize this response to intervention programs. Next slide, slide 4, please. We'll do a quick graphic breakdown of who we are, and you can see from our student population, 53% Caucasian students, but 32% of our students are Alaska Native American Indian students as well. So we have a good breakdown of who we are. We're serving approximately 2,290 students, if that counts our preschool programs through grade 12. We speak 8 different languages within the school district, and that offers us some unique challenges as well. But let's start at the best beginning, and of course, the best beginning is a wordplay coming right back into other organizations that are concerned with school readiness. If we go on to slide 5 and hit the advanced ones, you'll see 2 young gentlemen on the right-hand side of your screen. If you hit the slide a second time, you'll see our community parents that are involved with our students at preschool. We started a preschool program 3 years ago using stimulus funds and the Ed Job money that came through from the federal government. We saw school readiness as one of the key elements to making sure that we had student success along the road. We created what we would call a three-legged stool of funding. We used Indian education grant funds. We used our special education requirements for preschool education. And using the stimulus funds, we were able to offer universal preschool to everybody within our community. So we've been serving anywhere from 140 to 155 preschool students using those funds, and it comes out to really being a fairly nominal charge if we use the collaboration of multiple agencies to provide that service. So the issue we see right now, the biggest thing from us to be able to continue offering a universal preschool within our borough is basically school bus funding. It's the transportation that really is holding us up. The two young gentlemen you see up there, we figure 30 years from now they're going to be our leadership, so we want to make sure they get a good start. I'm projecting the young man to our right, yeah, that's a future mayor, and then we look at the guy with the Captain America costume, and we're thinking maybe chief of police. We're not sure yet. So we go on to slide six. We'll go into our elementary schools. We have five elementary schools within the district. Three are your traditional elementary schools, and then two are charter schools. This year, if you hit the advanced one, you'll come up with a picture of the Tonga School of Arts and Sciences and Point Higgins School. Both of these schools have been nominated for National Blue Ribbon Awards. The Point Higgins School is for school achievement. Outstanding test scores, student achievement, fantastic parent involvement with the school. There's a number of positive things. If you ever want to see one of those Lake Wobegon type of schools that's ideally set in a beautiful facility, strong community, that's a great place to go, and the student achievement scores reflect those. Tonga School of Arts and Sciences is a charter school that's located right in the heart of Ketchikan, and it serves students in preschool through grade six as well. They're being recognized for closing the achievement gap. The gains that have been made at various populations within that school have been just stunning over the last few years. Our district philosophy has been from the very beginning to incorporate the charter schools as a regular school. So we don't think of them as being a separate entity within the district. We see them as being very much ingrained within our district working philosophy. But out of the five elementary schools, two of them have been named as nominated as Blue Ribbon, and all five schools all make AYP. We're quite pleased with that. So if we can go on to next slide seven, it just gives a quick, and it hit the advance, you'll see a couple pictures come up of our students in action, and noting that our students all make AYP. What we're really pleased with right now is when you break down statistics, of course you have your advanced, you have your proficient, below proficient, and you have your far below. What we're looking at in our district has been stunning in our view in terms of how effective RTI, response to intervention and positive behavior support, has been in transforming our student achievement levels. We have approximately 2.5% of our students are at the far below range. Take that into that context. There's only 2.5% are at the far below range. We're reaching out to those students through our special services programs and heavily engaged in a tier three model of response to intervention to continue to increase their scores. But that's a pretty good statistic to show that most of our students that are not proficient are at a below proficient level and well within striking range of becoming proficient. So we're very pleased with what our academic performances are coming through our elementary school. If we can slip on to slide eight. It features Schoenbar Middle School. Schoenbar Middle School several years ago went to the one-to-one model, putting a laptop in each student's hands. And one of the things we're really excited about over at Schoenbar is they recently received the prestigious Ing Award. It's Unsung Heroes, and it's for quality staff, student performances that are taking place. This is a nationwide award and a little cash for the school as well. But this is a great example where RTI PBS comes together with this one-to-one model in the digital education. We feel it's absolutely essential for our students to be successful in high school is for them to be successful and well-prepared at the middle school. Middle school is your dropout prevention programs. This is where the real action takes place in making sure that students are successful. We found that students who go into high school ready for high school, achieving academically, integrated well with their peers, participating in after-school activities, very seldom drop out. It's the students that become disengaged or are not prepared, therefore they don't have the academic success starting as freshmen, or they're even afraid to get into that freshman level of school. Those students are at risk. So we think the Schoenbard Middle School, its receiving of the Amy Award here recently, shows that we're doing a great job, and our dropout numbers reflect that. We've dropped out, our student dropout rate has been reduced by a significant amount over the last 5 years, and we think it's directly responsible from Schoenbard Middle School. We can hit the next slide, and that'll be slide 9. And it should be showing Ketchikan High School. Ketchikan High School is going to the digital instruction era as well. We've spent the last 2 years offering staff training, putting the infrastructure into place, and this next year we'll be going more and more to the one-to-one type of model at Ketchikan High School as well. But the key to having a successful high school really comes down to having quality staff. We have a superior staff here, and as a result, we get some fantastic student achievement awards, and I'm going to highlight those here in a few minutes. One of the things that we find particularly interesting is more than 25% of the staff in our school district are from Ketchikan. We have kids that go through our program, they're very successful, they enter university and achieve what they'd like, and they want to return to this community. As a result, we have a number of really very talented teachers that have come back to us that are actually a product of our system. That causes us, of course, to be vigilant. We want to make sure that we are producing the best quality teachers, and we start doing that through our high school programs. This last year, we had 148 seniors. 144 of them graduated with their diplomas. Four of them earned certificates of achievement because they hadn't met the qualifying exams. But if you look at those numbers, four out of 148, that's a pretty good statistic. Of our students at the high school senior class, 148 students earned or were offered over $2 million worth of scholarships. Recently, our AP program, the Advanced Placement Program, was named the best in the state of Alaska and one of the top 50 AP programs within the entire United States. If you look at the physical plant itself, you can see it's very, very nice. So that environment that we're talking about, by having a emotionally secure place for our students to work, is backed up by our borough's ability to supply us with excellent facilities. We can go on to the next slide, please, and it's slide 10. And hit advance there, so we have the two pictures that come up. There's the superintendent watching a couple students working through, and then we have the vocational programs. We want to make sure that every student is receiving the type of program that they need. So it's not just our advanced placement program, it's also our vocational programs, the remedial programs, the college prep, everything that's going on for every student to be successful. Our vocational programs, of course, you can see our picture of our boat. That's the Jack Quintan School District owned and operated for our fisheries programs. We offer robotics, culinary, health services, construction academy, child care type of programs at a vocational level in high school. Our community is really involved with our district plans as well. The ship and dry dock has helped us with our welding programs. They set us up with mentoring and apprenticeships. And then the Southeast Builders Association has brought us the Construction Academy, which actually ends up funding us in one of our vocational teachers. We go on to the next slide, slide 11. Shows a picture of the Ravella Alternative School. This is an extraordinarily successful program. I've been around the state. I've been employed in the state of Alaska on and off since 1984. I've been working with vocational special needs students in various districts, and it's been my pleasure to see a lot of alternative schools, but this is perhaps the most effective alternative school anywhere in the state. They're very well known for offering high quality, very personalized services to our students who need to be into a program other than your traditional high school model. And we currently have about 120 students there. They will have upwards of 180 students over the course of the year. I have one of their staff members here, so he's making sure I'm giving the right information out. About 180 students transferring in, transferring out. So they have quite a flow of students over the course of the year, but they do a tremendous job. And we've seen 5 years ago, our dropout rate, we had probably 120 to 150 dropouts per year in our district. We cut that to 76. We cut it to 36. 2 years ago, it was 28. Last year, it's 24. This year, we're shooting for in the teens. Again, 2,290 students and our dropout rate in the low 20s. And a big part of that has to do with the Schoenbar program and then also the Rivella Alternative School. We can go on to the next slide, please. It shows Rivella's focus on dropout prevention. And the big part here is that they end up being able to offer what students need. We have some students who have real adult life situations that they face. And be able to work with them in a school context so that they can continue their education but still be adaptive to the situations these children are facing out in the world make a big difference. And so we have some information here on our dropout prevention programs. Next slide, if you will, is slide 13. We realized that students learn differently than what they did 10 years ago, even. And we've created what we call a fast-track virtual school, online programs that offer not just the students who need completely alternative programs, but off-campus type of programs, and then also working with homeschool parents. As a result, we now have 53 students who are new to the district. They were homeschoolers going elsewhere for education that now can be served within the district. We've had upwards to 218 students over the last 2 years take part in this online education, everywhere from remediation and credit recovery to acceleration. A lot of people don't understand that acceleration, being able to graduate in 3 years, is sometimes as effective of a dropout prevention program as offering extended services over 5 years. Some students are capable, able, and ready, and they need to move on in the three-year period. So Fast Track is a program that allows them to accomplish that. And again, what you're seeing here is a three-legged stool type of concept. We have a traditional high school that's very effective, offering AP vocational programs, remedial courses for success. And we have an alternative school with face-to-face programs for students who have to be into a different scheduling situation. And then we have an online program for students who don't have that ability to meet with the teachers on a regular basis. Between these three programs, we're able to continue students' academic programs regardless of expulsions, regardless of their parental status, or other issues that may prevent them through traditional models of not being able to graduate. We're really pleased with that. And if we go on to page slide 14, you'll see blended education. And hit the button there, and you'll see these two start to blend together. Face-to-face educational programs and rigorous schedules of traditional high school is changing. It's not as effective model as it used to be. The online program, and we've learned this through Fast Track, it exclusively is not an effective model for some students as well. They'll get lost in that. They don't have the skills to be able to learn on their own. So we're looking at what's called a blended education model. Somewhere between 30% and 80% of your instruction would be online. So if you take the traditional face-to-face model, the digital environment that we're working at K High School, we have 0 to 20% of your instruction will be online, and the rest of that is in a traditional classroom, and you've got a one-to-one with or face-to-face with your teacher. The converse side of that, where 80% or more of your instruction is online and you don't spend very much of your time in front of a teacher, that would be your virtual school. But somewhere in between, where you may have anywhere from 30% of your time in front of a teacher or 80% of your time online, it's that blended model that we see has been very, very effective, and we're going to be moving more and more towards that and putting actually Revella and the Fast Track programs into a single school nucleus so that we can serve students in this new educational environment that we see out there. We go on to the next slide. It's slide 15. This shows our some of the end of the school results. Of course, we would have, I think as many school districts have, some questions on how some of the statistics get put together. But when you start following the rules, these are the rules, and you'll see that most of the accomplishments within the school district are very positive. As I mentioned before, we had 144 out of 148 students graduated last year, over $2 million worth of scholarships. The four Certificate of Achievement students, that means they hadn't passed their high school qualifying exam but met our graduate credits. We've had students come back as 1-2 years after they graduate to still pass the high school qualifying exam. We are hopeful we'll still capture those four. This includes all of our special services programs. So this is not exclusive of special needs students. This is inclusive of that. Five out of all five of our elementary schools made AYP, and our assessments are very good. But if we go on to slide 16, it should have a headline there. It's called Student Achievement. Is that where we are?
Yep. Yes.
Well, thank you. I just listed out some of the student accomplishments this year. Gage Failey, he's an alternate for the U.S. Senate Youth Scholarship. Brittany Thomas is awarded the Coca-Cola Scholarship. She just got back from Atlanta flying out there for that. It's going to be at least $10,000 a year award for her, maybe as high as 20. Brendan Stanton, American Legion Oratorical Representative of Southeast Alaska, and Brendan is the only Alaskan selected to attend the Youth Leadership Conference in D.C. this year. This is through the Rural Alaska Electric Program. It's an outstanding award. Alec Pankow is one of 35 out of 7,000 applicants for a full ride at the University of Puget Sound. He's also selected as a candidate for the Presidential Scholars Program. If you think about that, we'll know within the week that he'll be one of 144 students in the entire nation if he goes to this next level. Outstanding student. Case Kukhovan, been offered a full ride at the Merchant Marine Academy. Remember that picture of the Jack Potant we showed you here just a few minutes ago. And Janelle Stacy's been offered a full ride at University of Idaho. Our senior classes year in and year out have outstanding graduates. They're competitive nationwide, and they do very, very well within state competition. Why? It all starts with good teachers. So if we start off on slide 17, it'll have some things on staff award. Rebecca Bowling, English teacher up here at K-High, great books, great teachers award, one of 10 teachers in the United States selected for that. Chad Fry, Alaska Social Studies Teacher of the Year. Susan Stone, VFW Teacher of the Year. Sean Marie Carpenter, Alaska Health Teacher of the Year. Mark Woodward, he's here in the audience with me today. ASD Technology Contest winner. Marion Gonzalez, contest winner. Robert McCory, our counselor, is Counselor of the Year, but is also named one of the top 10 counselors in the United States. Katie Hook, who is our classified person, ESP Employee of the Year. We have a great staff, starting with our certified teachers, high school, running through our middle school, elementary programs, and our classified personnel are outstanding as well. We go on to the last slide, page 18. If you remember at the beginning, I tried to draw your attention to our strategic plan and the pyramid that was in the background, which rested our response to intervention program and our positive behavior support. Coinciding with that, is, if we hit the advanced slide, you should see the Ketchikan Gateway Boroughs logo. And it just happens to be in a triangular form as well. And that's just to bring into focus the fact that the borough and the school district have to be jointly working together for us to have this success, being able to offer the facilities and the staff our programs the way we have. Thank you, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, excellent presentation. We are running a little bit short on time here. Do we have maybe one question from committee? Representative Wilson.
I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question to you, Robert, is with your alternative high school, you had like 120 students maybe, and I was wondering how many teachers?
Ten,
okay. It sounds wonderful, like you've really got a good program all around, it sounds to me. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you.
Representative Sisson, do you have a concise question?
Well, I hope it's concise as I can make it. And was really delighted to hear about the fact that you're doing online with kids that can't be there. And is sometimes that health related? And yeah, I'm seeing a nodding of the head. But the second thing I'd like to know about that online is some of the efforts that you're making to also have a presence possibly online with experts, administrators, assemblies, that kind of thing, to get people out into their community to understand what's happening within your community using that kind of technology.
Yes, that's correct. We do that as well. I've got Mark here in my office with me. As I mentioned, he was the ASCII, the Technology Education Contest winner, and he's confirming the things that you said. Yes, we do.
Great.
Thank you. Okay, Superintendent Boyle, thank you. Very impressive. It really is good for us to hear from folks on the ground. And I promise we'll take your report back to the rest of our colleagues here. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Sorry about the weather and poor communications up front. Couldn't control that.
Yeah, there we go. But we saw you and we heard you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, next we'll take up HB 256, State Intervention in Schools. And after the March 5 meeting, there were apparently still some just concerns about language in the bill, and I really want to do this right. I don't want to move it on without doing it right. So we've incorporated the changes into this new version U, and I think we call it the U version because you guys helped me make this better, all right? So we have the CS, and you have an explanation of the changes, and you have a new sectional analysis which explains each section, including all the changes. But first, procedurally, we need to bring the bill back before us. So, Representative Wilson, will you move to rescind our action in moving CS for HB 256 version X from committee with the accompanying fiscal note and individual recommendations?
Yes, I move we rescind our action in moving CS for House Bill 256 version X as amended from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal notes from the Department of Education and the Early Development and the zero fiscal note from the Department of Administration.
And hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Representative Wilson, would you move to rescind our action in adopting CS HB 256 version X?
I move we rescind our action in adopting CS HB 256 version X.
Okay. And hearing no objection, first time I did this backwards. Okay. Okay, the motion is adopted. And Representative Wilson, will you move CS HB 256 version U for adoption?
I will move CS HB 256 version U for adoption.
Okay, dated March 12, 2012 for adoption. Okay. Okay, thank you, Representative Wilson. We do have Representative Seaton.
I'll object for discussion of the changes that we have.
Okay, we do have CSHB 256 version U before us. Annette will first go through the CS section by section and outline the changes. Annette, please.
Mr. Chairman, Annette Kreitzer, staff to the House Education Committee, and Chairman Representative Dick. The first change, well, first of all, let me say, Mr. Chairman, that for the record, we set out version T, and I want to be really clear that the motion, as you heard earlier from Representative Wilson, was that we had moved version X out of committee as amended. And the easiest comparison for committee members and for the public was to take version T, which included all of the amendments the committee made to the X version. And so that was the reason for comparing versions T and U. And so looking at your CS that's before you, version U, the first change occurs on page 3 and amends line 22, amending the duties of the department. We had, in the previous version, this had talked about regulations adopted or recommended for public schools, and in further discussion with your committee members, some of your committee members, the department adopts and recommends plans, and you have provided opportunity for public school and district administrators to participate in that. And so any of the plans that are adopted or recommended for public schools must include all of these other elements, A through H, and those have not changed substantially. With the exception of on page 4, G has been rewritten, not changing the meaning or intent, just to make it a little clearer. There was a little excess verbiage in there, and that was excised. And then also the next change is on page 4, lines 16 and 17. This is number 3, the department will employ qualified personnel who shall provide advisory and consultative services to all public school governing bodies and personnel. And then we just separated this out so it wasn't one long paragraph. The services must comply with AS 1407-03014 and may not include the use or employment of a trustee. Page 6 has a minor change, but it, the sentence reads better on line 26. And this is, I think, duties of the department. Engage in a process of collaborative support to restore and improve school performance when a school is designated as low performing instead of if a school is designated low performing. And makes clear, also we rewrote this collaborative process to just streamline it, make it read a little clearer and be clearer. When we start the first school year at the designation of the school as a low-performing school, we've inserted the word by there, by August 15th, the selection by the superintendent of the district and the commissioner, and made very clear that this is one independent expert to evaluate the areas that are listed at the top of page 7. The other change to that subsection is to limit the visit by the expert to no more than 7 days to conduct that initial evaluation. Also on page 7, in November, there, as you remember, after the report is written by the expert, there will be a selection of qualified coaches to advise the district with regard to the needs that are identified in that evaluation. And so the addition of a time limit for those coaches is in that little 3 there on lines 17 through 19 on page 7. The coaches may advise the district for not more than 20 days in total for each school year for which they are hired. And this means that if one coach is more helpful and more needed, that coach can be there for 15 days and the other coach can be there for 5 days, but they need not be there for 10 days.
Representative Seaton.
thank you. A clarification on this. When we're talking about advise the district, that means on-the-ground time, or does that mean trips to the schools as well as email contacts and those kind of cooperative agreements?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, the chairman and sponsor may want to clarify his intent, but my understanding, and in talking with our legal folks, the intent is to limit their time on the ground to 20 days.
Okay, and can we get that clarification from the sponsor, just to make sure that that's, to me it's a little unclear as what advising the district means, and so I want to get it on the record as to what the intention is for that.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Seaton. And I did speak with superintendents about this, and I said, you know, what if somebody were to come to you, you know, what's, you know, at what point would they be the person, a clutter under your feet, and at one point would they be there too short of a time? And I think in the agreement was that that limiting this is speaking to time on the ground, and certainly there would be communication and phone calls and emails in between. But it seemed like any more than that would be in the way, and any less than that would be inadequate.
Thank you.
Okay. Again, also beginning at the bottom of page 7, this is in the second year with the mandatory selection and hiring of two additional qualified coaches. The change begins at the very last word after input from the Alaska Association of Alaska School Boards. So in year 2, when two additional qualified coaches are selected to advise the district, then one coach shall be selected by the superintendent and one by the local school board. There was discussion about the best way to assist the local school board to do this, and so we had language in there earlier that talked about a school board member from a high-performance school district, but thought that input from the Association of Alaska School Boards, based on testimony on SB 285, based on their previous statements about their involvement and the work that they do educating local school boards, so that amendment was made to allow for input from the Alaska School Board. And again, these two coaches would advise the district for not more than 20 days in total for each school year for which they are hired. The next change is doesn't change the meaning of what the school improvement team can look at, but we thought that they should also look at the implementation of the Alaska State Cultural Standards and preparedness of students to learn, and that is on page 8, lines 24 and 25. Page 9, following line 1, we've deleted a subsection that had required the department to request proposals from and provide grants subject to appropriation to schools or districts in restoration. It just seemed to clutter the bill a bit, and so it was removed. The department does do that. Page 9, lines 3 and 4. We remove the language, notwithstanding any other provision of this title, because I've discussed this with Ledge Legal, and the interpretation is that because we are specific in Section 6 about the redirection of public school funding, this language is confusing and inconsistent with the language that's been added in Section 6. Also on page 9, lines 9 through 11, we've removed the language that the department directs employees at the school who exercise supervisory authority for instructional practices in the district or in a specified school. And the reason for that is that we've set out this new collaborative process for the department to follow. We've also added clarifying language in B, directing the use of appropriations under this title for distribution to a district as necessary under AS 1407-020A19, and that is the new school improvement team process. So the school improvement team is involved with the commissioner, the commissioner's designee, the Board of Education representative, and the coaches in recommending how funding ought to be redirected if necessary. Page 10. We deleted former Section 7, which amended the powers of the department, and you'll recall some of that language was the department may employ coaches if the school or district agrees to the coach and the terms of the contract. So that section was removed. And then also on page 10, lines 13 through 16, this was an amendment to add a requirement that contracts for teachers must require a teacher leaving employment to complete the department's exit survey. And those are the changes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
I have a question on that last one. Is this all teachers across the state or just in intervention schools?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, this applies to all teachers.
Okay. I was hoping that's what it, that I wanted that on the record so that we can get some good data from them.
Mm-hmm. Representative Seaton. I'm sorry.
I think Ms.
Thank you. I am playing catch up, and thank you very much. I wanted to ask. I've noted the different teams, et cetera, that are helping here. But what I want to know is, this is a totally different idea. There are some really substantial changes to the way the department is working, and I'd like to ask the department as well this question. But I see a lot of value in the changes made here, but what's absolutely imperative, it seems to me, with anything we do, is to make positive we've got the ability to, next year, the year afterwards, 5 years from now, be able to look back and see what kind of impact this had, this change had, on the outcomes, and can that be derived through the various things that I've seen put in this, that I have online reports, et cetera. But is there enough so that legislators 5 years from now can look back and see, this was dynamite, this was great, this changed everything, or not? Is this going to be able to have that kind of evaluative tool?
The chair, Representative Sisna, I think the evaluative tool is the involvement of the local communities. I mean, I don't think that that's been explicit. It wasn't explicit in Senate Bill 285. I don't think it's been explicit in the department's regulations currently. It's not explicit in the department's regulation or statutes currently. Where it is important, and the reason that in one of the sections of the bill we cite that any regulations that the department undertakes in some areas for improvement of schools has to be consistent with the Moore case. And so I think that I don't know that there is a structured evaluative tool, but I think rather than trying to create an evaluative tool, the process itself will help those involved to evaluate how well it's working.
Follow-up?
If I could do a follow-up. Oftentimes you don't need to actually put it in the statutory language, but at least if there's a sense of the committee to put it on public record that there will be an evaluative process here to make sure that we're making this as good and that it's iterative, that we really are growing.
The chair, Representative Sisna, I think what you're seeing is a reaction to Senate Bill 285. I think what happened is the school districts came forward and said, this isn't working for us, and so we want something to change. And so I think that's what the legislative process provides, is that very public process and ability to make change when something that folks entered into, and I read and reread the minutes of Senate Bill 285. There were many assurances that it wasn't going to be a takeover of the school district. There were many assurances that the department was only going to go in on a district-wide basis, on a school-by-school basis, not on a district-wide basis. But you've heard testimony that that's not what happened, at least in one school district. And so I think that this process, this very public political process, and the process that's set out in House Bill 256, allows for that evaluation as things go along, rather than just waiting 5 years and seeing how it turned out. I do think that there'll be more evaluation all along the way.
Yeah. If I could comment, the and I won't speak for the commissioner, but as I met with him two Saturdays ago, it's pretty obvious here that what's happening is we're really relieving the department of some of the responsibility here, that it's actually broadening out the participants, and so the focus isn't on the department to perform and making the districts perform. And I think one of the most important people involved in all this would be the Board of Education person on the on the team, who can go back and speak to the Board of Education, who the department itself answers to. So, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to comment that, you know, we've built in some evaluative tools, such as the teachers have to do exit surveys, so we find out. We've got superintendents evaluating the departments. So those are in there, but really the evaluative tool is whether the districts and the schools are low performing or whether they improve and are no longer low performing. And so part of the problem with the intervention right now is that we saw some schools under intervention were not changing from being low performing schools to adequately performing schools. And so it seems like what we've got here is a much more collaborative process, but this is process, but the evaluation is whether students learn. And so that is going to be going forward, and this is a multi-year process. No one can snap their fingers and have changes at one time, but this is a process that starts in the first year. There's some attempts to get correction. If you don't get correction in that year, there's a further step and a further step, but the evaluation is, in my view anyway, whether students are no longer low performing. And that's the evaluation tool I think that you're looking for.
Representative Sisman.
Thank you very much. Well, and there's the problem. The big problem that we have is we live in many worlds in Alaska. More than in most states, we have places where it just simply is not set up for the commercial life that we have in an urban center. You're not going to be able to make them happen in many of the places we have in Alaska, and they survive by totally different standards. A crisis there is something that we would think of as a disaster. It does what you're learning in some places is going to be a different. It's gonna look like a different palette completely of skill sets that you're going to need. And so there should be, and I didn't see that necessarily in this, the ability for the district to see that this community is very different, that they're going to be heading towards different outcomes, that Ketchikan is going to look like Ketchikan. And they're real close to the border, and they can get down to Seattle real fast. They can get into the world market very quickly. And some people out in Tintituliak, or one of the very, very remote areas in Alaska, the adults there are there for a totally different reason. They're raising their kids same way homestead parents have decided to do homeschooling, that kind of stuff. We've actually in the state made that something that's legal. You can do that. You can choose where you want to be. And schools ought to reflect that some. It ought to be in there. And sorry, I didn't mean to take so much time.
Thank you, dear. We will talk about standards on Friday. It'd be good. Okay, Representative.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm a little concerned because what I'm hearing you say is that you're willing to tolerate low-performing schools, that is not going to be our assessment, that the schools are performing their task and that kids are learning, or that you are saying that, I mean, I don't know where it comes from. If we're looking at low-performing schools and addressing low-performing schools, and you're saying some schools are just going to be low-performing and we don't need to address them because they want to be low-performing. I mean, is that... or performing in a different way, or they don't want to homeschool. They want to be schooled in, I mean, they have that option. those parents that want to do that can homeschool, they can take other distance education, they can take other options. But if we are going to have a school that is run by the state and we have performance standards that we want to, if we're going to take the tack that we're going to say that they don't need to perform, then granted we wouldn't need to be doing much of this. But so I guess I'm concerned that we don't leave it on the record that we are saying that schools don't need to perform.
Mr. Chair, so that it doesn't get left on the record that I said that. What I'm talking about is performance being high, that every single person born in the state of Alaska has freedom to go to one of the Alaska school, one of the Alaska public schools, and that they get the ability to grow to their highest potential, each person, but that it's very different here.
Thank you, Representative Sisna. Is the objection to no. the
Mr. Chairman, I'd remove my objection to the adoption of version U.
And if there's no further objection, CSHB 256, version U, is adopted. Any further discussion on CSHB 256?
Just
okay. Representative Kovacic.
Under discussion.
Excuse me?
Under discussion.
Oh, under discussion.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the willingness of the chairman and his bill to give us an opportunity to hear this bill again. And we've had, I don't know how many meetings, Annette, but only three? Okay. It feels like we've gone over this quite a bit, and it's gone a lot from the original just repealing Senate Bill 285 to this iterative process. So it's been more than three. Yeah, I think it's been closer to half a dozen maybe. Anyways, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the willingness of you as chairman and of the sponsor of the bill to give us the to provide us with this bill. You know, when the bill started, and I had to go from the very beginning, I don't know if everybody went to the very beginning, but it was just a bill dealing with Senate Bill 285 and repealing it straight out. And it's changed quite a bit, but sort of the question still remains about whether the bill is actually going to get us what we really want to get. And I appreciate the refinements that have been put into it. I still think that there's some challenges, and this bill went from a one-page bill to a 10-page bill. I'm not sure how it will actually impact the teachers on the ground and the coaches and the school districts. And so I still have a little bit of hesitation with the bill, but I do, again, appreciate the opportunity to be able to address the issue. Thanks.
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, we've made significant changes in the bill. Is the department here to address the bill as we've proposed it now? And can
yes.
we hear from them?
Deputy Commissioner Les Morris or Cindy Curran, if you'd like to come and speak to it.
For the record, my name is Les Morris. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. I think what I'm being asked just are overall remarks on the current version. The Commissioner reviewed a couple drafts ago that we got prior to him leaving, and as he looked at it, he didn't see significant changes or problems that caused him any more consternation than the previous versions. I would indicate, however, the latest version did remove the some of the authority the department had. One particular area where the authority was removed is for non-teachers, instructional leaders within schools and districts. The department's authority to be able to remove someone from a role of instructional leadership was removed in this version, and I think that will cause us concern in terms of reducing our our toolbox of tools that we could have. The other pieces that are concerns, I think, were already existed there. The trustee, the removal of being able to have a trustee in place was removed in previous versions. The only other piece about the 20-day rule that I would have concerns about is I think different situations may require different numbers of days, and I worry about a limitation like that when it may require 30 days, it may require 5 days. I think that being in statute is somewhat limiting. So I think outside of that, I'm sure the commissioner reviewed other concerns. Those are things that were relatively new, I think, in this legislation.
If I could respond in terms of the number of days, I think that just my thought was that by putting a parameter on that, it would help you folks come up with an accurate fiscal note. The last one was a little hard to sit down, take a deep breath. So I think this one here will allow us to have a very accurate assessment as to how much this is actually going to cost. I think that, and in terms of that, the clause about the department's ability to send somebody in, that was actually on page 9, lines 9 through 11. That basically is the description of a trustee. You know, employees identified by the department to exercise supervisory authority for instructional practices in the district or in a specified school. In the case of this bill, what this bill is doing is creating a team that will have joint responsibility. It will have the authority to go in and say, this is the plan. But this here, this lines 9 through 11, is really the definition of a trustee, and that's why that was omitted.
If I could respond, okay. Chair Dick, that's not the department's interpretation of that language, and it wasn't our interpretation when SB 285 was put in place. Our interpretation was that if we saw that a principal in a school or that someone at central office who was responsible for the improvement of instructional practices in the district was actually impeding the improvement of instructional process in some way in the district, that the department could have that person removed from that role within the district. The district would have the right to reassign them to a different role. But that's how we viewed that at the passage of SB 285. That's how we still view it today. I will tell you we've never exercised that tool from the toolbox. But that is how we view it. So it may be a different interpretation of that you have, but that's our view of that language.
I'd like to comment, and then Representative Wilson. And I guess my response to that is if we can come up with something clearer that would meet your need and our need, I'd certainly be willing to speak to that as it moves on to the next committee. I'm certainly not trying to take away the effectiveness of what we're all trying to do here. Representative Wilson.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering, Les, how does that work? I'm trying to think in reality what would happen if you took you did exercise your authority and made a change with a tenured teacher. With a tenured teacher, I'm just kind of wondering what the fallout would be.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, let me be really clear that this would not relate to teachers. It has to be a person in a leadership role who is responsible for the supervision, supervisory authority. So it would have to be a principal or a central office employee. Now, let me also be clear, though, that principals do gain tenure rights within school districts, so the tenure issue still does remain a question, so I will answer that. In that particular case, the removal actually gives the department the authority to remove someone from a position, but we don't have the right to actually remove someone from employment. So in practicality, how that would have to work if that came to be is if the district chose to not remove the employment of that person, yet we said they had to be no longer exercising those supervisory responsibilities, the district could choose to put him in a non-instructional supervisory role. They could decide that, you know, this person isn't a good administrator, but they were a phenomenal teacher, so we're going to put him into a classroom role. They would have to find either a new role for that person or exercise their potential decision to non-renew that particular.
Representative Wilson.
Follow up. And my concern is, because I'm thinking they have a contract with that person already, and if they were removed and now was going to be an instructor, they would still have to get the same pay for the rest of the school year as they had because they have a contract, right?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's absolutely correct. It may be that the department would make such a recommendation for this to occur beginning the next calendar year, but since we've never crossed this bridge, it would all be hypothetical to guess how that might look exactly.
Okay. I think it just makes me feel a little bit better that we've taken that out, because with the way the school districts function now, if that would happen, they would have to keep paying that person, but they wouldn't be in that supervisory position, so they'd have to get someone else. So it would cause the school district to have to have pay another person higher salary. So anyway, because of that, it would cause problems under the circumstances. And like you say, maybe it could be worked out the next year, but it's just some thought. That was just a thought process that went through my mind, that there could be problems with something like that.
And again, between committees, if you'd like to have that conversation, I'd be glad. You know, if this is something severe, I mean, obviously, if there's moral turpitude or whatever, we can get rid of anybody anytime, whether a teacher or otherwise. So, okay, any other questions or comments from Deputy Commissioner Morris? Okay. Thank you, sir. And let's do talk between this and the next committee assignment. Okay. Where are we here? Okay, Representative Wilson.
I'm ready to make a motion.
Please do.
Okay, I move the CS for House Bill 256, Version U, from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal notes from the Department of Education and Early Development, and the zero fiscal note from the Department of Administration.
Okay, and hearing no objection, so moved. Okay, brief of these while we sign. Education Committee will come back to order. We will meet Friday, March 16th at 8 a.m. to hear the confirmation hearing of University of Alaska Board of Regents student regent Mary Freitag. We'll have a superintendent presentation, Jeff Thielbar from Skagway School District. We'll have a discussion of the proposed language state education standards with Department of Education and Early Development, and SB 137 suicide awareness and prevention training. And if we don't get to SB 137 on Friday, we'll certainly take it up on Monday, March 19th. And with no further business before us, we're adjourned. Thank you all.